Reading from Luke chapter 16 and reading from J.B. Phillips' New Testament translation of the New Testament. Luke chapter 16. There was once a rich man who used to dress in purple and fine linen and lead a life of daily luxury. And there was a poor man called Lazarus who was put down at his gate. He was covered with sores. He used to long to be fed with the scraps from the rich man's table. Even the dogs would come and lick his sores. Well, it happened that the poor man died and was carried by the angels to be with Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried, and from among the dead he looked up and saw Abraham a long way away and Lazarus in his arms. "Father Abraham," he cried out, "have mercy on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in agony in these flames." But Abraham replied, "Child, remember that during your lifetime you received your good things and Lazarus suffered the bad. Now he is being comforted here while you are in agony. And besides this, a great chasm has been set between you and us, so that those who want to go to you from this side cannot do so, and people cannot come to us from your side." At this he said, "Then I beg you, Father, to send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers. He could warn them about all this and prevent their coming to this place of torture." But Abraham said, "They have Moses and the prophets. They can listen to them." "Ah, no, Father Abraham," he said, "if only someone were to go to them from the dead, they would change completely." But Abraham told him, "If they will not listen to Moses and the prophets, they would not be convinced, even if somebody were to rise from the dead." The Gospel of the Lord.
Last year, my wife and I were privileged to travel, and we spent some time in the United Kingdom and, of course, visited London. And as we travelled on the Underground, there was one thing we kept on hearing over and over again. Does anybody know what it is? Yeah, mind the gap. That's it. Mind the gap. Today's gospel reading is about a gap between the rich and the poor, between the haves and the have-nots. It's also a reading about being accountable. By what criteria will we be accountable for our lives? And it's also about being awakened, about being converted, about being converted to compassion. The parable you heard today is actually an old Egyptian tale. That's its origin, and Jesus takes it and tweaks it and tells it in his own way. A lot of the Bible, little bits come from here and a little bit from there, and the Babylonians have a creation myth, so let's take a little bit of that and make it ours. So Jesus has done the same with a folk story that was popular in the Mediterranean area. It's a story about a rich man. In the old King James Version, they called him Dives. I think it's supposed to be Latin. Dives, I think. But anyway, Dives and Lazarus. We'll just stick to calling him a rich man. He dresses in fine purple linen, a sign of sure wealth. He leads a life of luxury, he eats well, but he's totally unaware of the others. The others being people who aren't rich like him. And then a poor man, a man who's a beggar at his gate, the rich man's, he's called Lazarus. He, by contrast, lives a life of misery, of dependence, who longs only to exist by having the leftovers. And he's comforted. Can you imagine him being comforted only by having the dogs come and lick your sores? He is very aware, not just of his own situation. He is aware of the gap. He is aware of the rich man. Now, in eternity, the story goes, the positions are reversed. Who's aware of the other now? The rich man, who longs just for a tongue's tip of water to quench his agonizing pain. Is he granted mercy? No. There's no way for the gap, for the chasm to be bridged. So what was his sin, this rich man? Was it because he was an unbeliever? Well, we don't know. Obviously, that's not the point. Was his sin because he was a villain, an oppressor, or violent? Now, rich people can be those who are part of oppressive regimes. But we don't know about this man. No evidence for that. Is it because he loved affluence and had expensive tastes? No, these things in themselves aren't the reason. Is it because of his high position and influence? While an important fact in the story, it's still not the reason. By the way, Lazarus is not painted as a particularly virtuous or religious man at all. So what was the rich man's sin? It was indifference. We talked about this at the earlier service and someone said apathy, but indifference is apathy squared. It's being unaware, not conscious, not aware, for example, of Lazarus, as if the beggar at his gate was not even there. He's blind to the suffering on his own doorstep. I'm reminded of a story in the book of Revelation, and perhaps it's not my most popular book of the Bible, but there's that section where letters are given to the seven churches, calling them to account. And it's, you know, it's a bit of good thing and a bit of, and some bad things and whatever. But there is one of the churches have to account for their quality of life and mission. And the letter says to this church, I forget which one of the churches it is, it's got a name. I know your works. You're neither hot nor cold. So because you're lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. For you say, I am rich, I have prospered, I need nothing. You do not realise that you are wretched, pitiable, poor, blind and naked. Wow, it's a bit tough. I know when I was a student, we'd love reading that bit, spit you out of the mouth. You know. So where does indifference come from? Well, firstly, people can just live a life of what we call immediacy. All they want is to have a life of comfort and ease and not kind of be aware of anybody else. They're only aware, they're turning on themselves. And it's me, mine, and what comes next, and that's all I'm concerned about. You can decide to live a life like that. But then, most of us are not like that. We are people who are more conscious. We have a different level of consciousness. We know about the world. We're aware of what's going on to a degree. We know what's going on. And yet, as Paul Tillich says, we can still live as if we're ignorant. And he says, and I'm talking about some of the most sensitive ones amongst us. Well then, thirdly, people can become indifferent because they might live in a society where there is widespread poverty and somehow they kind of get used to it. Janine and I were part of a program in India where every year we ran a 3-week intensive training program. And it was about how our faith is to be converted into action. And so people got all this theology and Bible and social methods and lots of that stuff. And I remember the last one I attended, it was in a place called Pune, south of Mumbai, a moderate-sized city, and we'd have all these bright young people, particularly young people who were kind of young graduates, most of them. And they all came from good middle-class churches across India mainly, and we'd send them out to encounter the city. And we'd send them out with instructions and all that they had to do to take care of themselves. And they went to the places of poverty within the city. And they would come back. And they'd say, guess what? We saw beggars. You mean you saw beggars and you live in this country where beggars are in fact everywhere? Well, it's possible to still be blind even though it's all around you. Or we can rationalise that we are not the rich. Well, visit Indonesia, visit the Philippines, and you'll get a different idea about who's rich and who's poor compared with us. Or there are those who can say, and these are hard-nosed people, well, we can explain poverty. We've got statistics and how, or people who have a certain view of life say, you know, things are getting so much better in China, people are getting wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. At whose expense, of course. Or people can quote, you know, even the Bible and say, well, gee, even Jesus said the poor are always with us. We just have to get used to it. Well, friends, the scriptures make it perfectly clear that the love of money, if we read the Timothy reading that was set for today, it's that reading that's got that famous phrase, the love of money is the root of all evil. It's clear that the love of money and comfort creates this great gap that can turn us from our neighbours, turn us inwardly to ourselves. And then, of course, we may even rationalise that people are poor because it's all their fault. Blaming the victim is a sign of the great chasm. When have you seen it? Sometimes governments get the idea that we deal with the problem with all these people on welfare with solutions, but if you sort of see the tone of the way they put these things forward sometimes, you know, it's all their fault. Well, back in our story, in conversation with Abraham, the rich man wants to warn his 5 brothers that their ultimate fate is based on whether they care or not. Send Lazarus to warn them. Oh no. If he, the rich man, didn't notice him, why should they? And the parable then says, you know, actually, in fact, they're already blessed. They've got Moses and the prophets. What was Moses and what's the law and the prophets all about? About caring, about love of God and neighbour. There are no excuses. Even a miracle won't do it. Even having someone rise from the dead. No. You have to decide from life itself where you awaken to care and to have compassion. And you know when that happens, when you are awakened to care and have compassion, that is the real miracle. Sometimes it just takes one instance for that to happen. When we lived in Bombay in the early 70s, we lived in a Methodist compound, the American Methodist compound, I'd have to say, in Baikala. Probably, they said it's the most densely populated place on earth, but other places claim that as well. But we had beggars in our street, and there was this beggar, a particular beggar at our gate who died. His death was actually quite horrible. I won't go into the gory details. And my wife, Janine, said, he's dead. We have to arrange for him to be buried. So she went to the Catholic priest, or the priests. Gloria Deo Church was reputed to have been the largest Catholic parish in the world. It was in what was then called Bombay. And they asked, well, is he a Catholic? Well, we don't know. Well, I'm sorry, we can't help. I'll find the Methodists. Well, the Methodist ministers all suddenly disappeared. They couldn't be contacted by anybody. In the end, luckily, we could find that in the city of Bombay, there was a group of people whose mission it was to care for the people who died on the streets, that they would have actually have a proper burial. They weren't a religious group, by the way. They were just a group of secular people, a certain part of a government agency. That was their job. But, you know, after that, we were far more conscious of the beggars in our street. Now, institutional poverty is a problem. There's no way you can cure poverty just by giving people your excess or what it is you had to give to people. On the other hand, we were far more conscious of who they were as a people from that day. We knew that our care had to extend to them as part of our world. How else is the chasm bridged? Well, I think we have to start looking out on people who are less fortunate than ourselves and look below the surface. One thing I learnt in Bondi, where our church's mission there was the homeless people, that everybody who's homeless has got a story. Don't rush into judgment. Find out what the backstory is, why it is that people have come to the position that they have to live on the streets. If you care and you hear the story, you understand, and your sympathies are able to go with the people, but also then, if you practically care, you then might be able to lead them into a way where they can not have to live on the streets. You see, I think compassion is something that has to happen to us. The Christ story may do it. If in that parable they could say, you've got Moses and the prophets, what have we got? We've got the Christian scriptures, we've got the Gospels, we've got Jesus. But you know, it's not just because Jesus rose from the dead that we might be led to care. It's more because we see in Jesus the one who is the human face of a compassionate God, of one who is partial to the poor and who is for them and whom in Jesus is willing to pour out his life for them. So, always, the one requirement is to see, to become aware. And the young people at that ITI in Pune, bless them, many of them decided that they're going to lead different lives after they return to their home place. Some of them even decided to give some of their time working in the projects that our group was working with in Maharashtra. Their awareness led to action. And of course, mentioning Moses, I was talking with Jen yesterday, and we were talking about, you know, what happened to Moses? He'd run away from Egypt. He'd been caught in a lie. He'd been brought up in the palace, but he really was a Hebrew. He runs away, said, I'll get away and I'll live a comfortable life. I'll even get married, which he did. But there, what happened up into the mountain? He couldn't hide anymore. He was burnt up. And I think that burning bush experience was his brain burning because he couldn't get out of his mind the misery of his people. He had to respond. In fact, his caring was in sync with the divine mystery. And God is reported to have said, I have seen the misery of my people. Go, Moses, go. And so Moses changes sides from privilege to identifying with his people who are the enslaved and the poor, and confronts Pharaoh as the representative, Pharaoh that is, of the oppressive regime. You know the stories. When Have you been touched by the misery of those who've been on the other side of the social divide? I want to conclude with some quotes. One, of course, is from my favourite theologian of all in the 20th century, and I think will be speaking to us long into the 21st century, and that's Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He writes in his, I think it's his letters and papers from prison, he says, after all his experience, "There remains an experience of incomparable value. We have for once learnt to see the great events of world history from below, from the perspective of the outcast, the suspects, the maltreated, the powerless, the oppressed, the reviled. In short, from the perspective of those who suffer." And of course it took the liberation theologians, particularly from South America, to work out how it is, not just the church, but how societies can be renewed when those who are the poor are able to see things differently and be able to rebuild their societies. I'll skip that second quote and go to Dorothy Day, whose quote is up there on the board. Note that quote from one who devoted her life, this is Dorothy Day, an American, she devoted her life in getting the Catholic Church in America to use its wealth to house the poor, to feed the hungry, and to change civil structures to enable a more equitable distribution of wealth. Her quote reminds me of Jesus when he said, "Inasmuch as you respond to the least of these, my children, you did it unto me." And my final quote is from someone who's speaking just at this moment, I almost want to say. It's the person who's delivering the Boyer Lectures, Sir Michael Marlowe. And he said this last week, speaking to Australians, "The alternative to poverty is not, as some may suspect, wealth, but rather justice." And he asks of us Australians, do we have the will to close the gap between poverty and wealth in our country, to close the gap between the incredible misery and poverty of many Indigenous people and the rest of us, people of the Australian wider society? Do we have the will to close the gap? And he says you can do it in a generation. It's been done before. "Go and do likewise," said Jesus. Jesus said that only if he thought that we can. Of course we can. Let's do it without guilt, just simply because we care. May we at Moriata be known as those who care. Amen.